Blog Talk Radio.
Ghani, Alafia, thank you for joining the Care to Read Room. You have your Omiika 7 live coming to you straight from my new studio. I no longer am going to say my living room because I am in my new studio. Welcome once again. To those new friends, I say what's up. And to those old friends, I say greetings. Have a seat. Ladies and gentlemen, you have just entered into our new specimen segment of 120 clock hours. Now, yesterday, because we were out and about, it was a little noisy, disruptive, and family members quarreling, trying to get out of the storm. That's right. We had a terrible storm here in northern Indiana. All of the electricity and lights were out in the Hammond Hour area as we were traveling back to get to our home here in Maryville. We discovered soon later on this morning that our electricity would be out. So we had an awfully trying evening, and voices got a little loud. People were cross and upset, and we were trying to get people into their dormitory, which had no electricity. So you can imagine how that went. Our show was a little choppy, and we're going to redo that show because we felt it wasn't nice to have all of the family members on the show talking and yelling and screaming. So we're going to give you that show in duplicate forms today. So just bear with us as we get ourselves together and trying to bring you the best that we know how to bring you. Just understand that our crew is not fully on staff yet. As I told you, we're waiting for a few attorneys who have promised to take the lead and take over the attorney at law segment. As you know, they haven't been here for a while. Shame on Attorney Brayton, because he has been given the call, the clarion call, and he's been on the show. But he's taking care of business. Nevertheless, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to proceed with business. We have on the itinerary to talk about bankruptcy, Chapter 7 and Chapter 13. We're going to briefly go over that segment, so it will be covered. However, you know that we have to get in the spirit, right? That is our first segment of the hour. And because it is the power of faith that gives us the strength to come here every day or to be here at least 4 days a week, we have to rely on the Spirit to guide us. And we're not led by our own intuition. It is our spirit. So be patient with us. We will get there eventually. Because of the power of faith, let's go to station identification, and we're going to call on that power of faith to help us along as we figure out what it is that God has called us to do. Each and every one of us have a calling, and we must know if we're working in our gifts. I know that God has called me to this, so be patient with me, and I will soon deliver full potent strength. Here's the power of faith.
Every day, from the moment I thoughts that stay on my mind.
Yes, yes, our faith is strong, and it is our ancestor song. That's why we recognize our ancestors every time we're on this line. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to ask you to stand to your feet. Let me go over to the phone lines and welcome my co-host, Mrs. Harvey, and ask her to also join with me in prayer. Good evening, Ms. Harvey. How are you?
Good evening. Just fine. How are you?
Ms. Harvey, will you touch and agree with me on one accord as we go over to the talking cure area and pray?
Yes, I'm touching and agree.
I'm calling you to prayer. Will you please come? I'm calling you to prayer, Mrs. Harvey. Will you please come?
Yes.
Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, stand to your feet. We're about to enter unholy ground. As you know, we periodically come into contact and to one being with God. And we ask the spirits to be present with us. And as we ask the spirits to be present with us, we begin the process of reconnecting our ancestors back to our family. As you have always heard in this room, that we do not believe that our ancestors can die. We believe that they live on forever and that they're in the atmosphere and that you can tap in and reach them at any given time. If you don't mind, why don't you tap in and call on your ancestors and set a glass and a candle for each one of your loved ones and call their name periodically, just as I do. As I ask you to stand to your feet, putting your hands faced up, as you are getting ready to receive the blessings from God, knowing that you have not because you ask not. Whatever your needs are and whatever you desire, stand to your feet and ask God to acknowledge your needs. There are many of us that are sick and don't even know it. We're so sick in our spirit and in our mind that we can't hardly stand up or hold our head up. And those who are out there who are functioning half-baked, one would think, undifferentiated, someone who might be mentally off balance, someone that might have anxiety overtaking their body, someone that might be working with bipolar disorder, unbalancement, someone that might be taking medication and that don't want to take medication anymore, but want God to clear their mind and clear all suicidal potential. Someone out there don't want to be stuck anymore. Someone doesn't want to be confused anymore. And if you are out there and you are waiting, welcome back, family. Thank you so much for going on that journey with me as we went through the Talking Cure. Ladies and gentlemen, we do that periodically so that you can reconnect with your ancestors. Join me as I light a candle for my mother's spirit, and you can do the same and say, Ashe. I light a candle for my father's spirit, and I say, Ashe. I pour a glass of water for my father's spirit, and I say, Ashe. I pour a glass of water for my mother's spirit, and I say, Ashe. I pour libation to the east, and I say, Ashe. I pour libations to the west, and I say, Ashe. I pour libations to the north, and I say, Ashe. I pour libation to the south, and I say, Ashe. And ladies and gentlemen, I also wash my hands and face so that I do not greet the ancestors with a stale face. And I say, Ashe. Ladies and gentlemen, do that periodically and set your 9 glasses of water with your water filled each week, making sure that you dedicate each one of your glasses of water to your mother's spirit, your father's spirit, to the God in heaven, Oladulamare, Olarum, the God that created the God that had created the, just like he created his son Jesus, Oromola is the black prophet. So dedicate a glass of water to Oromola. Dedicate a glass of water to Ori, your Godhead. And ladies and gentlemen, do this periodically and set your altars up and go to your altars and call your family to prayer. It's very important that we take time out of our schedule to call our family to prayer. And ladies and gentlemen, I want to say a special prayer for those families who are struggling with family members out there who are sick and ill in their minds and their bodies. I want to say a special prayer for those mothers who have children that are gone wayward and that need assistance in their home and in their school. I want to say a special prayer. I'd like for the mothers to know that we are joining hands in prayer as we stand with our feet erect and our hands open. We continue to pray for our family and our children. We continue to ask God to intervene on behalf of our family so that our family is reconnected and our family doesn't stray away from the Word of God. Some of our family has strayed away, and we need to call them back. They've lost their way and have no direction, and they don't realize their purpose. We call back each and every one of those family members and tell them that God has a purpose for you. God has a purpose for you, and you asked to come here to fulfill that purpose. We also call those family members back and remind them that you are not your own. Every day you must ask God to fit you into his plan. You were created for the benefit of God, and God will be able to know experience through your eyes and understand that everything you do must be to the glory of God, and that you do not walk after flesh and blood. You do not walk after flesh and blood because flesh and blood is partial. It's temporal. It is not consistent. It will fade away. But spirit is eternal and lasting. Seek after the spiritual things and hold tight to them. Don't let anybody spook you out and tell you they're witchcraft or voodoo or High John the Conqueror. You can't do anything in the flesh that is lasting. It is temporal. Everything you do in the spirit realm is eternal, everlasting. Know that what I'm teaching you is true knowledge, and understand that you must take a grasp. You must grasp this thing like dear life, because your life does depend on it. And if you put too much flesh in material things and in your flesh, it will perish. And all of your things that you store up, the moths will get to them. They are not lasting. Sometimes we place our faith in the legs of a man. The Bible even said, don't put your faith in the legs of a man, because they will fail you or she will fail you. You have to put your faith in God. God is eternal and everlasting. Know that when you seek out a direction for your life, seek out the Spirit. And if you're quiet enough, and if your spirit is settled enough, you will hear the words from God. And you will know that it's God speaking to you, because you have to develop a relationship. I didn't say talk to someone that's physical. I said develop a relationship with God. Go to your throne every day and petition God and call on your ancestors. This is how you have a develop a relationship with God. You do that to remind yourself that you are not your own. You were bought with a price. And because you were bought with a price, you have a debt to pay back to God for saving you. That's right, for giving you grace and mercy and setting you aside. You have a debt to pay, and that isn't to buy more computers and buy more cell phones and iPods, but you have a debt to pay to be committed to go to the highways and byways and tell someone about the good news that Jesus saves, and that he saved you, and that you have a chance to live everlasting here on this earth. Maybe you can save someone from going through the hell of the fire. Now, the fire we experience every day, we don't have to wait to die to go to hell. Each and every one of us have experienced hell in the worst way. But we have to understand we want an everlasting life, one where we'll become eternal and that we'll never leave. We'll always have our spirit present here on this earth. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm teaching you the new thought concept along with African spirituality. Now, most of you know I am Yoruba. You know that I focus in on African spirituality. However, my undertone foundation was Christianity. You don't just get up and walk away from your foundation. You build upon it. So I'm building upon it each day by becoming more African in my nature and in my spirit. Some of you have to have a longing to be a part of your homeland, Africa. Some of you have to understand that you need to connect back to a tribe. You need to be able to connect back to a language so that you can identify with your culture, because out of your culture comes your religion. You will never know your religion until you know your culture. Now, the question here today is to be or not to be African. I choose to be a born-again African spiritualist, knowing that I know my culture, I understand it, so therefore I can produce my spiritual walk with God, and I don't have to pick up a second-class Johnny-come-lately ride with someone else's regurgitated religion. And that is why you do not hear me on here talking about I'm a Baptist, I'm a Catholic. I don't talk about the fact that religion matters. It doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is that you stay true to yourself and knowing that you're an African first. So you must accentuate on the positive things of the African tribes and race, and you must speak on those languages and use those tones, and you must also learn prayers in your native tongue. Now, Omi hasn't did many prayers online lately in the native tongue, but I plan to get back to that segment and give you a complete segment on Yoruba lifestyle as we talk about our family life. Now, we're going to be talking about our family life today, so maybe I'll get a chance to talk to you a little bit about the customs and traditions of the family life in Yoruba. Right now, I would like to take you over to a commercial, and then we'll be right back at you in the atmosphere talking about attorney at law. And I'm going to just give you a brief overview of bankruptcy and chapter 7 and 13. Stay tuned.
I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo, and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers, My soul has grown deep like the rivers.
Thank you so much for that poem, I've Known Rivers, and A Negro Speaks. Ladies and gentlemen, periodically we want to indicate to you that we are a family and consumer science room. We focus in on closing the gap of disparity of illiteracy. We have partnered with the concept of junior achievement and their curriculum. We'd like to also direct you to that website to go there and look for the curriculum materials that you can incorporate in your households. That curriculum is free of charge by Junior Achievement. We certainly want to say that Junior Achievement has given us a great topic of, is financial literacy the solution to a college education? Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to understand that our financial literacy must be talked about on a day-to-day basis. And you must also understand that as we grow closer and closer to understanding economic status, we need to train our children so that they can gear up to take over and rule and manage our economic status much better than what we have in the past. And we'll be talking a little bit more on junior achievement and on financial literacy. However, right now we're getting ready to talk about attorney at law. Our attorney at law will be heading up a segment that will cover family law primarily, and the other attorneys that will come on the line will be doing criminal law. So hopefully you'll get a plethora of various different specialties from the attorney. However, today, because I am not an attorney, I am a paralegal. I'm not a member of the bar. I just want to briefly give you some information about the fact that things do happen. Bad things do happen to good people. And periodically we get into a financial quandary over which bill to pay and who to not pay. However, the bill collectors don't stop calling, and there is relief for us when we find that we have our backs against the wall. And bankruptcy was created to create a relief for corporate entities. Now, corporate organizations have had access to bankruptcy for a long time. They've been able to get out of debt, reassume a new name, and go on and persist with a brand new name and advance themselves by getting relief from bankruptcy. Now, it is now available to personal individuals as well as those private corporations. So, how do you find out about bankruptcy? Who do you go to? You go to your Yellow Pages and you look for bankruptcy attorneys, one that has a specialty in this area. You don't want to go to a generalist. You want to go to somebody that has a specialty area that will work in this area. And you want to be very, very cautious of the fact that bankruptcy is something that you must sit down with your spouse and make a decision about before you make the decision to go in to devour all of your documentation on your debt. Now, this is a lengthy process. It's not something that happens overnight. And as I said to you day before yesterday, that it is necessary for you to take a test. Everyone cannot qualify to go with a Chapter 7. If you do not pass the test, it is not recommended that you go with a Chapter 7. Now, as I explained before, a Chapter 13 is not relieving you of all your debt. It is a reorganization of your debt that you must simply set up a payment plan to pay back. However, the Chapter 7 is a full release of your debt, and not unless you pull things out that you want to continue to pay on, like your mortgage and your cars. You must understand that when you go into the attorney, he's going to ask you to gather all your documentation. Now, there is an organization that you can become a member of called Rocket Law. Under Rocket Law, there are forms and documentation that you can use under Pro Se. You can start the process by going to research the statute on Chapter 7. You can also look at the forms and see what they require from you. As you look at these forms, they will tell you exactly what you need to gather up, all of your debt, not some of it, everything that you want relief from. And you must type it into the form. And if you don't have the ability to type it, then you might want to pay a typist to type it in neatly to make sure you have all of the documentation of how much you owe when you start the debt and what is the balance on it. These are things that the lawyer will definitely tell you to do a profile before you even come to a consultation. Now, if you're smart, you will go online and you will become a member of organizations like Rocket Law or Legal Rocket and see how, you know, your membership can pay for itself, because some of these things a typist can do, and if you're a typist, you can type the information in. However, I would not recommend you try to do your own bankruptcy, because there are some filing dates and some appearances that must be made. Now, it used to be where you had to go to court to file. Now, most of the filing is online. But you definitely need to be coached by an attorney who will walk you through this. If you are overwhelmed and you need relief, you definitely need to be talking to an attorney and looking at your options and see if you pass the test to be able to process a bankruptcy Chapter 7 or Chapter 13. And thank you so much. As I said, I am not an attorney. I gave you a brief overview so that when our attorneys come, you will have some foundation knowledge about this subject. Hopefully our attorneys will be speaking on economic gestures and what we can do to get out of debt. And we're also looking for the attorneys to speak on family law as well. Now, you probably ask, what is family law? Family law deals with a plethora of topics, and one of them being dealing with divorce is the biggest area, wills and trusts, estates and probates, and as well as dealing with visitation rights for the family. Now, I didn't say father because the family, because when this divorce takes place, if it is a contested divorce and there's some problems there with visitation, you have to line those procedures up. And the judge will require you in some states to develop a plan called a co-parenting plan that you outline when you plan to visit your child and what are some of the activities you plan to do with that child. Now, if you've gone through a divorce, he will direct you to go online and to enroll in a 6-credit-hour course. That's a corresponding course of 6 credit hours. He expects that you will gain enough knowledge to go and do a plan. Some of the parents are not astute enough to do their own plan, so they hire a co-parenter facilitator that comes in to help them outline a plan for themselves as to how they plan to raise this child. Now that each one of these family members are no longer living together, how do they plan to raise the child living separately? Now, that is one aspect of family law, the divorce session, and co-parenting. Now, you can also find juveniles under this category for issues pertaining to foster care and pertaining to losing your parental rights. Now, one may say, how do I lose my parental rights? There are many ways you can lose your parental rights where you no longer have the ability to make decisions for your children. If your children are taken away and they're in foster care, you might lose parental rights. Now, I have been working with a group of women who have been working with the infants in neonatals and trying to service and give them relief, because infants cannot speak out on behalf of themselves when they are abused. So I have been asked to work with a group of people who will help identify what are the needs of these abused infants and toddlers. What are some of the things that courts can regulate and mandate that these children receive? And as a specialist in early childhood and family life, what do I recommend to the courts for this child in order to give this child a chance to thrive and to do well in society? Most people don't know the low birth rate that exists for African American children. It is horrendous. And I was really appalled to find out that not only abuse is ranking high, but infants are born here underweight, so much so that most researchers have gotten the attention of African-American women's low birth rate children. And there's now several research studies on the cause of low birth rate and why does it persist so heavily in the African-American race. And one of the shows that I was viewing about the research, a doctor indicated that he was looking at the lifestyle of the African-American to see how he could pinpoint what was causing this stagnant number of low birth rate children to be born. And lo and behold, to our dismay, that racism not only affects you in the physical while you're alive, but it also affects the fetus in the womb while it's developing. And the doctor who has this videotape, you can go online and Google low birth rates and you can find all types of topics on this. However, lo and behold, this doctor who did the research discovered that it didn't matter what your economic status was. You could be in the upper class and upper echelon of your class and be a doctor, lawyer, or an Indian chief or what have you. And if you are experiencing partiality on the job and racism, it will affect your unborn fetus. In fact, it will affect the birth rate of that child developing. And that is documented. This is not according to OMI. It is documented and can be proven. So we're asking attorney Braden to come on to help us address helping babies from the bench. That is our main focus, to look at how can we prevent this low birth rate. And I think we know the answer now. We know the answer that racism plays a great part in the child being born underweight. So if that is the case, then education must go forth. Because we all know that racism and prejudice is judging before the fact, before having any documentation or fact. So why are these influential women who are at the top of their profession experiencing low birth rate and they have all the income and great large sums of income to design a great plan for a basic food diet so that they are feeding themselves properly while they're going through their gestation period of 9 months. They're eating well, they're dieting, their diets are good, they're walking, they're exercising, drinking enough fluids, but nevertheless, the doctor discovered the baby, the fetus is underweight and that the mother will not deliver at full term. Now, there are midwives that work out in this profession, and they are also baffled by why so many black African-American women are delivering low birth rate children, and they're getting smaller. And this is a real issue that we need to look at because we can head racism off at the womb and stop the frustration that our intellectual women are experiencing on the job from racism. And if this is happening on the job, it needs to be looked into by the Human Resource Department for sensitivity classes to help sensitize everyone in the department against racial injustice. Because apparently these professional women are experiencing a large percentage of impartiality towards them, a lot of fear. So consequently, their hormones are relinquishing all kinds of enzyme that sets off this infant to put the infant at flight or fright. And the infant being in a fetal position already, it must be something that is so irate that you couldn't imagine that's causing this infant and the mother to go into shock. Now, how do you offset this, or what do you do in the workforce? The main thing you do is to make it known to your human resource that there are documentation and research out there that will substantiate a mother's belief that her fetus could be in danger because of the racism that is acted upon around the office, in the boardroom, in the classroom. That's right. We really need to look at this, because if we're delivering low birth rate children and we're affluential and have money and can prepare good meals and exercise and are healthy, then if an environmental virus attacks the womb, that can also be looked at and addressed, and we need to look at that environmental catastrophic and sit down and set up sensitivity classes to offset the problem. I'm very much concerned. I'm so much concerned that I talked to a professor from Purdue University that has been working on low birth rate, and she has done such great work in researching over in Africa as well. Now, third world countries do not exceed the low birth rate like the African Americans here in America do. There are some third world birth rates that are higher than African American, and they are not dealing with food substance that are balanced, nor do they have the income level to purchase the necessary foods during the 9-month gestation for delivery. So how do you fathom that when you have a third world country who are delivering babies at full term, when here in America, the land of the free, there are professional women who are delivering babies that are traumatized and that are low birth rate because of the racism that this particular woman is experiencing in the office, on the job. It needs to be addressed. It really does. Now, I've addressed it, and I'm hoping that with Attorney Brayton, he will head up this department to talk more about what we can do about that problem. I want you to understand that it is a problem, and it will cut down on the race being populated. And if this is a way to depopulize a race, this is definitely the route to go to traumatize the fetus in the womb before it's ever born, so that it won't have a fighting chance. Low birth rate babies are usually failing to thrive. And the reason I know this, in working in the hospital, working with neonatals in respiratory for over 4 years, I worked with nothing but infants and toddlers. I saw these infants trying to thrive. We were instructed to stroke the infants and give them the breathing treatment. Some of them were congested and had a lot of suctioning that needed to be done, and a large portion of them had to be monitored around the clock, and they had to be held. These infants come to the earth traumatized from racism, and it's been documented. Now, how did that happen? How are these infants coming here to the world traumatized from racism and impartiality? One would ask, how did the doctor find out that this was the stagnant problem that was causing these infants to become low birth rate? The research that went forward brought all of this information out. Yes, the research brought all of this out. Now, I want those phone lines to light up right about now. And if you don't have the number is 646-478-0270. We're talking about family life education. Now, we've just briefly talked a little bit about the law area, but we're going right into family life education. And I want you to understand that I am really, really concerned about every child development specialist being connected to not only the abusive cases that every year that mount up on the infants and toddler, but those infants who can't speak for themselves. There is programs out there in every state where you can help the babies from the bench. And if you have a child development background, you definitely want to be a voice for those infants who cannot speak for themselves. As an advocate, I have partnered with numerous women from state to state who are working with groups of people, committees, and various different specialists who work with child development to start to monitor the babies from the bench to see if they're getting the proper service. Now, if these infants are coming here underweight, they automatically are at risk for failure, and they would probably be receiving some services under 457, which would mean that the mother would have to know what are their rights to certain services and how to obtain them. So, therefore, mothers, if you're out there and you're special, your early childhood intervention specialist, you certainly need to be volunteering your time to work with these committees to help the infants from the bench who cannot speak for themselves. And one of the things, mothers, you can be doing is also prior to you delivering, if you suspect that your child is going to be a low birth rate and you suspect that there are some problems, maybe you can go to your doctor in advance if there has been previous children in your family who were born under low birth rate. You need to also set up support groups to assist you in finding out what are the documentation and the statistics saying on low birth rate for African-American professional women. I didn't say underserved, or I didn't say impoverished women who are on welfare. I did not say that. These are professional women who are working in professional positions who are delivering these low birth rate infants. Now, it is amazing, and I know it's rather shocking for you to find this out, you thinking that because this doctor who has been elevated in her profession knows how to eat and knows what to eat and how to take care of herself and get plenty of rest, right? What if she is getting all those things, but she is still delivering low birth rate babies because she's working in a department that shows partiality and she's threatened and fearful all the time, so therefore she's sending off enzymes in the womb telling the baby it must not be born, rejecting the entrance into life. It is a problem, ladies and gentlemen, and I want you to know it is a serious problem, so serious that I am not even faking the funk right now. I am so serious because this will relinquish the fact that our children will die earlier. It will relinquish the fact that that racism can go beyond the surface and it can go deep into the glands and prostates and ovaries. It can travel. It can affect the child. And what the mother's experience will definitely send off enzymes in her glands to affect how the child feels about life and therefore subject this child not to develop fully. Now, because it's not lower socioeconomic women who are eating junk food and who are not eating good diets and they're still birthing children that are healthy and full term, that stands to reason what is going on with these professional women. How are they being attacked in the womb? Well, inquiring minds want to know, and Omi certainly wanted to know, and I'm going to ask my counterpart, Mrs. Harvey, what she has to say about these babies being attacked in the womb. Mrs. Harvey, how are you?
Yes, fine. How are you?
I don't know if you have been listening, Mrs. Harvey, but we've been talking about committees of organizations who have vowed to work with the judge and identifying the needs of these foster care babies who are in the custody of the foster care, and these babies who might be in foster care, and the mothers have lost parental right, and therefore they've assigned probably a guardian ad litem, and they've placed the child in custody of a foster care home. Now, my question is, most of those children are with lower socioeconomic mothers. You probably wouldn't find a middle-class doctor or lawyer who would be having their children taken unless there is some type of distrust or physical abuse. Now, more than likely, those would be women who are single heads of household. Now, and those children are developed and full-term with these lower socioeconomic mothers. So what we're trying to find out is what are the reasons that these affluential businesswomen who are wearing skirt and dress to the office and punching in with their clearance codes and are working in higher affluential positions who are now having children later than ever before, but they're now afraid because they've had a segment of low birth rates in their family, and they can't seem to put their finger on why their children are born here under term. What do you feel about that, Ms. Harvey? Tell me what you have to say on this subject.
Well, I would just think that if this mother is, this is her first time childbirth, you know, and she never had a baby before, and she know people who had babies were ill like that, you know, I think she should get a doctor's opinion from him about what he thinks and how she should go about. Because I myself, I'm not very much aware of that. I'm not. I'm glad you brought it up because it's very educational. So you were talking about that because I am learning from it. I really am.
Well, Mrs. Harvey, I do welcome and solicit your honesty. And there, you're not alone out there. There's many other women out there who are professional who are probably just finding out for the first time that there's some research and some study being done as we speak. And doctors are revealing this information. It is not being kept a secret. It's not hidden. It is available. You can Google this information. And I think every woman that is in a professional role should be very much beside herself and would like to know what does the research show and the studies show and what is being done about this particular problem. Now, as I talked before, I did mention that African-American women and Caucasian women on the job are at war, and I mentioned that on my last show, but I had to delete that, so I want to repeat that. They're at war in the workforce, and there are a number of IE things happening, competition and also competing for the tall, dark, and handsome black male. So consequently, the racism still prevails on the job. No matter how much education or credentials you have, you're still being reprised. Now, what do I mean by reprise? For example, if you report someone being impartial to you and racial to you on the job, and you report that to Human Resource does an investigation, you can be reprised for your next promotion. You can be held back or prevented from promoting, and that's called reprisal. And if that should happen while your case is in process and you're waiting for an outcome, you can file another claim under reprisal indicating that you're being prevented from advancing. Now, a lot of women on the job have been taking a lot of reprisal behavior, and they've been chalking it up to the point where they've actually resigned. Most women don't have the ability to resign now. There are not enough jobs out there for people to be resigning their jobs that are African-American. They're staying longer now. So they're putting up with much, much more racial behavior and racial profiling on the job. What if that's happening to you and you're going through that right now? You can call in at 646-478-0270 and we can talk about it. Because it's not only going to affect you, professional woman, on the job from getting that next promotion. If you should happen to get pregnant, it's going to affect your fetus as well. So we're talking about that double minority that's going to be affected by this racial gesture on the job. What are some of the things that can happen to you that you seem to flake off your shoulder and keep going? For one, you're not told about updates information. You're never emailed and given updates about certain things that are happening in a department, whether it be things that you need to have addendums on and documentations of laws or regulations being changed, or even company picnics or even workshops and seminars that you should be made privy to. If you constantly find that they leave you out of all those things, then you have a grievance, and you might want to go to your human resource department to talk about that grievance rather than taking it in internally. It will affect your baby. It will affect your baby, and I'm saying that because statistics now shows that you can be on a job and experience this racism, and you keep it to yourself, and you internally hurt your baby and yourself. Now, if you are one of those professional women out there and you're afraid to call in, go ahead and call me on my private line. You can go to my webpage and get my private line number. It needs to be addressed. If you're a professional, you're in a war. Just as I said earlier, you're in a war. And most of our African-American people don't know that you're in a war. And you're fighting against a Caucasian woman. And most of the time we say she's in drag. She's carrying out the mission. But you want to stop that. You want to stop the mission from being carried out. You want to make sure that Human Resources is aware of what is going on. In the event that you're not giving your increases or bonuses, or you're not giving those promotions that you deserve, or maybe you're the last manager hired and you end up getting fired or let go. There is recourse as well. I know this because I once was a manager and was the last hired and the first to be released because they were deciding to economically tighten up their belts so that they can get back substantially on the course. However, you must know that you have a right to file a grievance if you think you're being mistreated, but you don't have a right to allow that baby to be contaminated or threatened to the point that they're born here undeveloped. Now, our babies that are born here undeveloped, they have failure to thrive. They're almost like they're in a state of depression. Those babies go into such depression that you have to get them to eat and force feed them because they refuse to eat. It's almost like a form of depression when they come here and they're underweight. You have to deal with getting their weight up to par and getting them to thrive. You got to get them to grip your finger, to hold your finger, to want to live. Now, if you're born here in the first few years of your life, you have no desire to live, and you're waiting on stimulus to stimulate you and make you want to live. It's a very, very terrible situation. Nevertheless, professional women on the job, you might be sitting over there right now going through something. You might have already put in your reprisal slip or your grievance slip, and you're waiting for the outcome. And if that is the case, share it with your sisters. Let them know what the process is and what has to be done in order to relieve this system, our African family, of losing their precious, precious infants at an early age. They're at risk for death because of the fact that they are usually in an incubator and they're in the hospital for several days, and those mothers are spending a large amount of money to keep those infants cared for in those incubators and to be given respiration and respiratory care around the clock. Mothers, I want you to know that this is a serious, serious problem with all of you, not just blue-collar workers, but professional women who are wearing the pumps and the brown suits and blue suits, who are going into those Fortune 500 companies and are choosing to have their babies at a later time and starting at age 30. And you're thinking that, oh, this must be because I waited so long. You need to research and find out why your baby is born at a low birth rate, or the doctor tells you in advance you need to abort because this child's not going to be coming full term. You need to know all these things. Now, we're going to be doing a special segment next month on the Mississippi appendectomy. Now, I started my whole program over in Europe on the Mississippi appendectomy because there were so many women that had interest in it. I won't begin to tell you all the secrets of the Mississippi appendectomy just yet, but most of you already know what I'm talking about. If we have a problem with babies born here under full gestation, and it's the professional women that it's happening to, you can imagine for those women who are lower socioeconomic women who are overseas, abroad, and they are having to take on new doctors who are recommending that they get birth control pills where they're losing their periods, and then eventually they're losing partial wounds and then losing a complete hysterectomy. All that needs to be talked about, ladies and gentlemen. This is not the show or the forum for that, but we are going to be bringing that to you in our next segment. We're going to be focusing in on that. I'd like to thank you so much for listening in. And just don't be a participant. Go out there and do something. Get on somebody's board. Go to the courthouse and tell them you're interested in helping the babies from the bench. And then talk to attorneys who work with family law and ask them if they're aware of the fact that there's a lot of large amount of low birth rate among African Americans. We need to do something about it. This is our youth, this is our brand new infants coming to us at a low birth rate at risk who will not make it to full term. Now, we have to address it, and we also have to address racism. It has to stop, and we have to point it out. Now, as I told you before, there is a war between the African-American woman and the Caucasian woman on the job. And there's so much war going on that the African-American woman is in a quandary. And she is releasing all kinds of hormones because she's fighting and she's angry all the time on the job. You don't have to be. African-American woman, you don't have to be. There are recourses, and you need to exercise those recourses because you want to save your infant. You want to save your infant from being low birth rate. And you can release that job because if you're staying on that job just to get a paycheck and you're frustrated and you have a potential of losing your child or delivering low birth rate, then you need to do something about it. Yes, it is documented now. This is not according to OMI. You need to do something about it. And you need to understand this war that we're fighting, yes, you're in competition for that tall, dark, and handsome black man. But why, you say? Why are the white women going after the black men? Because they feel it's their reasonable service. That's right. And you are going to continue to be in the pathway of her wrath. And if that is the case, impartiality and injustice may be shown to you. You have to report it. You cannot live under those circumstances. You have to make it known to the Human Resource Department. And this is only talking at you because we've talked a little bit about the fact that Caucasian women don't realize our position in this situation. Our position is that we point you to the direction of Lucy Dignish. I want to say that again, Lucy Dignish. Lucy and Dignish are one and the same. And it was discovered by some anthropologists that the oldest bones in the world were that of the DNA of a black woman. What does that mean exactly, Omi? That means that a black woman was the one that brought all civilization into the universe, into being, meaning that one of the oldest women in the world was that of a black woman, the DNA of a black woman, meaning also that Lucy and Dignish are the mother of the whole civilization. And all the others are our children, meaning that we are mothers. And the Bible tells us that you are to honor your mother and father, that you might live long on this earth. We must tell the Caucasian woman that she must honor us, and she must know that we have brought into being civilization. We are not looking to be at war. We are the leaders. And we are not looking to fight you, Caucasian woman. We are not looking to even put your lights out or to come in front and confront you. But we're saying that the spirits are going to remind you that you are to honor your mother and your father, that you might live long on this earth. So we're not going to play the games anymore in the boardrooms. We're not going to play the games anymore in those positions of authority. We're going to take the lead and just tell you who we are. We are your mothers. And because we are your mothers, you are to honor us and listen to us. Don't strike a blow against us and don't try to undermine us. This war is over with. I pronounce that this war is over with. The African American woman, you don't have to war anymore on your job. If you get in the spirit, if you get in the spirit, God will show you who you are. As he talked to that person at the right-hand side, as he made man and molded man, I know you were there, Queen. I know you were there besides God because you are the spiritual side of God, and you had to have been present when God created man. You are the open pit womb. So you have to let the Caucasian woman know exactly who you are. For a long time, we have not introduced ourselves. Caucasian woman, let me introduce myself as one of God's instruments and tools, and also as one of God's queens who resides with him at the right-hand side, meaning that we were there at the inception, and we know your inception and why you wanted to come here. So we have produced the universe as African women. You can look at statistics. Don't go with what Omi is saying. This is a document, and there's statistics to back me up. It's not according to Omi, and it is substantiated. So therefore, let's stop the fighting in the boardrooms and in the office and hospital. Let's stop the fighting. Let's stop the war. Babies have to be born, and we want to deliver those children in full gestation, full term. Now that you know that we are the mothers, then you will also know that you can equate us to being gods as well. If you look at the history, when they talked about family, the only family that existed was a strong black woman. The men were taken out of the households and used as studs. So if we were the heads of the household and we made it over the grain house and we came out of the kitchens and we kept our families together, then we've got to be something like a god or other. Believe it or not, Caucasian woman, you're fighting a spirit, so you can't ever usurp your authority over a spirit. God said that we were the spiritual side of him, the feminine side. So if we are the spiritual side and we are able to see into the spirit and we're able to clairvoyantly know what the next thing is going to happen, that would make us kind of psychic, or that would also make us clairvoyant and gifted as a prophet. Now, I'm going to speak some prophecy over you today so that this war can end. Caucasian woman, if you come to us correct and knowing that we were the deliverers of all civilization, then maybe we can spend time conversing with you about womanhood, because God has certainly gave us every option of raising up a nation. The nation that needs to be raised up right now is that of a black woman to solve the cares and the problem of the world. This is a warning, because if you want to save the United States, you have got to look to the source of what can solve the problem. Once the black woman is revealed as being God's, working with God, and also delivering every individual, the Caucasian woman will then begin to fall to her feet and be humble enough to be trained and learned from a black woman. Why am I saying this? I'm saying this because I've known this war has been going on all the time. As a matter of fact, I had to fight in this war overseas against several white women. But they didn't know that I was functioning as a god. Their whole attempt failed. And at the same time, I had the government up on my shoulder. And I would imagine each and every one of you have been in war too. And you have war injuries to prove it. Now, we're not going to have any more war injuries. We're not going to take any more scars. No more scars. We're not going to be injured anymore by the insults of racism. We're far more intelligent than that. We are gods. And if we are gods, we got to stop fooling around, playing these games as if we don't know what to do. Our mothers have taught us what to do. And African women had their spirituality. We were born with it. And we had an oral language that didn't include the biblio-mutilated Bible. It was innately placed on our Kostic records, our DNA, on our medulla oblongata, and we can bring it up at any time in our ori, in our head, in our third eye. It can be revealed. So we have Kostic records that we have wakened up. We're no longer slumbered in sleep. A lot of us have been asleep for a long time. But because this war has persisted, I've called the women, the Moni women, to wake up and to come out of this anesthesis. Because for a long time, we've known we had the solution to our family's problem and our nation's problem. Why do you look upon Oprah Winfrey with the gaze of a god? Because she is one. And she has supplied the world with what it is they need. And she will continue to do so. So now let's solve the problem. I said, now let's solve the problem. You cannot have children leading you anywhere. Children must take a back seat. You must have the adults to lead and guide. Now, we're saying that the war is over because your weapons are carnal. Our spirituality will cause us to tap into the underworld, to tap into our ancestors. You don't want a war anymore. We've allowed you to physically bring injury to us. But you don't want a war anymore because we've tapped into our spirit realm. And our ancestors are angry. And they're very upset with what we've taken off of you and allowed to happen in our communities, in our boardrooms, in our jobs. Our ancestors are saying, enough of this. Mother Nature will take revenge. And our ancestors will stand up and align themselves as soldiers. So this war has been called off for the benefit of the nation. The war I told you about that African Americans were having with female Europeans is over. And the reason why I'm calling it a truce is for the benefit to get on with the things and the matter of our economic status so that we can turn the situation around. You must understand that our black man that you're competing for, Caucasian woman, belongs to the black woman. There is no hatred in our heart for the black man, and neither are we at odds with him. He is not up for option, and he's not up for sale. We understand that he suffered with us through slavery, and we dealt with his wound through slavery. We are his best friend and best keeper. So we're going to care for our black men, and we're going to unite with them. But the war is over. The war is over between the Caucasian and the black woman. As of this day, there will be no more quarreling, no more ingestion of babies being born under gestation. I'm decreeing that this racism and prejudice behavior on the job is going to cease. And mothers don't have to deliver underweight babies that are African American anymore. They don't have to go to human resource crying out for relief anymore. All you need to do is tap into the energies and tell Mother Nature about it and your ancestors, because you are not to vindicate your adversaries. The good book said God will vindicate your adversaries. So the war is over. You don't have to fight anymore, African-American woman, and you don't have to be on the job feeling racism and secreting all of these enzymes to your unborn fetus who is coming here underweight. The Lord said, if you decree a thing, then watch it happen. I decree this day. So we're going to sit back and watch the ancestors and Mother Nature intervene on the African-American women's behalf. Thus saith the Lord. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I had to go there on you. I had to, because this topic was meant to be brought forward last night. And because of some unnecessary storms, Mother Nature was out taking revenge, and we were not able to deliver it. It is being delivered in full form today. And I want to thank you so much for going with me dealing with family life education. Now, if you just join me for a commercial, we're going to go to commercial, and we'll be right back at you in the atmosphere. And we're going to go to Miss Seeley Speaks in a minute. But right now, I want to go to Rosa Parks.
Rosa Parks. This is for the Pullman Porters, who organized when people said they couldn't. and carried the Pittsburgh Courier and the Chicago Defender to the black Americans in the South so that they would know they were not alone. This is for the Pullman porters who helped Thurgood Marshall go south and come back north to fight the fight that resulted in Brown versus Board of Education. Because even though Kansas is west, and even though Topeka is the birthplace of Gwendolyn Brooks, who wrote The Power for the Chicago Defender Sends a Man to Little Rock, it was the Pullman porters who whispered to the traveling men, both the blues men and the race men, so that they would both know what was going on. This is for the Pullman porters who smiled as if they were happy and laughed like they were tickled when some folk were around, and who silently rejoiced in 1954 when the Supreme Court announced its 9-0 decision that separate is inherently unequal. This is for the Pullman porters who smiled and welcomed a 14-year-old boy onto their train in 1955. They noticed his slight limp that he tried to disguise with a doo-wop walk. They noticed his stutter and probably understood why his mother wanted him out of Chicago during the summer when school was out. 14-year-old black boys with limps and stutters are apt to try to prove themselves in dangerous ways when mothers aren't around to look after them. So this is for the Pullman porters who looked over that 14-year-old while the train rolled the reverse of the Blues Highway from Chicago to St. Louis to Memphis to Mississippi. This is for the men who kept him safe. And if Emmett Till had been able to stay on that train all summer, he would have maybe grown a bit of a paunch, certainly lost his hair, probably have worn bifocals and bounced his grandchildren on his knee, telling them about his summer riding the rails. But he had to get off that train and ended up in Money, Mississippi, and was horribly, brutally, inexcusably, and unacceptably murdered. This is for the Pullman porters who, when the sheriff was trying to get that body secretly buried, got Emmett's body on the northbound train, got his body home to Chicago, where his mother said, "I want the world to see what they did to my boy." And this is for all the mothers who cried. And this is for all the people who said, "Never again." And this is about Rosa Parks, whose feet were not so tired. It had been, after all, an ordinary day, until the bus driver gave her the opportunity to make history. This is about Mrs. Rosa Parks from Tuskegee, Alabama, who was also the field secretary of the NAACP. This is about the moment Rosa Parks shouldered her cross, put her worldly goods aside, and was willing to sacrifice her life so that that young man in Money, Mississippi, who had been so well protected by the Pullman porters, would not have died in vain. When Mrs. Parks said no, a passionate movement was begun. No longer would there be a reliance on the law. There was a higher law. When Mrs. Parks brought that light of hers to expose the evil of the system, the sun came and rested on her shoulders, bringing the heat and light of truth. Others would follow Mrs. Parks. Poor young men in Greensboro, North Carolina, would also say no. Great voices would be raised, singing the praises of God and exhorting us to forgive those who trespass against us. But it was the Pullman porters who safely got Emmett to his granduncle, and it was Mrs. Rosa Parks who could not stand that death. And in not being able to stand it, she sat back down.
That's right, she sat back down. Ladies and gentlemen, won't you join us in our part two segment of Is Our Mothers Raising Their Daughters and Loving Their Sons? We want to make sure we get that topic in here because it is a definite needed topic, and we want to introduce some of you to that topic, and others of you I would like to review. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back, family. Part two segment on are the women raising their daughters and loving their sons? We wanted to give you this segment all month long because it's very necessary. And mothers, if you joined us yesterday or day before yesterday, we've been talking on this topic. And this is a topic that originated from Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu as he writes and does lecturing. He's talked several times about women raising their daughters and loving their sons. And we wanted to piggyback on with that topic, just as usual. I piggybacked on with several other topics that Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu has been able to lecture about. Now, why do I say that mothers are raising their daughters? That's because, and I want to add another addendum, that some mothers are raising their daughters. Then there's other mothers who are not particularly raising their daughters. Now, women in general do more for the girls and give them more of an outlet to learn the basic things in life. However, it has been very, very difficult to see where the foundation is for the black male. He doesn't know his way around in the kitchen. He pretends to because he's embarrassed. He goes in the kitchen, and mothers have not spent time showing them about how to prepare their kitchen, making sure that they have seasons, making sure that they have the equipment they need in the kitchen, and also making sure they go shopping every once in a while to buy all of the utensils and the staples that they need in the kitchen. So in the event that mother cannot cook, or if a wife, once they're married, cannot prepare a meal, they can go in the kitchen and know how to develop a meal without starving. But mothers are not taking that time to show young men that. Is it because the young men are giving mothers a hard time about getting them in the kitchen? I would say it is, because every now and then when you ask a young man, come on in the kitchen, let me show you how to cook something, they're very reluctant. Because they're afraid to talk about what it is they don't know. But it's very important that you get those young college students into the kitchen, mother, and show them how to use utensils, show them how to measure, show them basic things that they need to know in order to go and use a mixing bowl without having the stuff splatter all over the walls. Show them how to be neat in the kitchen so that when they're done cooking, they can put their things away and clean the kitchen. So a large portion of young men are taking home economics. They're going in and they're taking parenting classes, and they're also taking the cooking classes because inquiring minds want to know. So what's happening, mother? Are you raising your daughters and loving your son? Well, they're going to home ec classes now, and they're asking to enroll in these parenting classes. I know, because as a home ec teacher, I was told that the numbers of enrollment has increased. So what does that mean, mother? They're not learning it at home. I know they're not, because I've had a darn of a time trying to get mine to come in the kitchen and to watch me and observe me. But sometimes I notice through a jaundiced eye, a watching eye is watching what I'm doing, and they figure if they can get some of it right, at least they can piece the rest of it together. But that doesn't work. Mothers, these young men need to take the classes, and they need to enroll in home ec classes, and you need to be the first class that you offer in 101 cooking. First of all, showing them how to use grease in the kitchen. In the event that there's a grease fire, you tell them immediately. You don't throw water on a grease fire. You get some kind of staple flour or any type of oatmeal, and you smother the fire or soda. So they'll understand how to keep you safe in the house without burning the house down. Now, there's some young brothers who have a gift for it. All they have to do is look at the movie on TV about cooking and dining out. They got it, and they can go in and cook a full 6-course meal. Then there are some men that are all thumbs, and they can't ever get it right, and it never looks like the way it is on the recipe. You have to work with those young men more. But that doesn't say that you don't teach them mothers. You got to teach them their way around the kitchen. Then you got to tell them, you're not just going to be taking the trash out. You got to make your bed up before you leave every morning, because when you come into an unmade bed, it does something to you mentally. And you tell them that whatever you take out, put it back and leave things the way they were and clean up behind yourself. That is the biggest complaint of women. Men getting married who don't know how to clean up behind themselves. They think their wives were born to clean up behind them. That's the best way to fall out in a relationship, by not putting the top down on the toilet, by not cleaning behind yourself, leaving the bathroom fresh and dainty for the next person. Now, the other thing is being considerate. Why are some boys that are growing up as men remain a little boy? Because they forget to be considerate of others. They have to be taught this, mother. You have to be considerate. Think about what you would like somebody to do for you. And it's not always about you. And sometimes you're going to have to be the bigger person, the man, and think about everyone, because a man learns to take care of his family. Now, mothers, while you're doing that, stop buying your son those $120 gym shoes just to get him to clean his bedroom. Stop giving him things and make him earn it. Get him, at age 16 or 14, a work permit and take him to the job. Matter of fact, before you take him to the job, call the company and say, my son needs a job. Can you help me out here? And tell him why you want your son to get a job and why it's necessary that you start the process. And get him in a job that he can excel at and help him to go to work, so he can take care of those expenses that he's been waiting on you to pay for. Now, so you're not just raising your daughter anymore. You're now raising your son. And you're making your son accountable. Mothers tell your son that they're going to put money in the bank. And this is what Dr. Juwanza Kanduzu did. And they're going to put so much money in the bank that that money can become theirs by the age of 16 if they don't make a baby. You got to tell young men, if you make a baby, you're responsible for taking care of it. And in our house, we do not raise up babies without taking care of them. We take care of our responsibility. So young men got to understand that mothers are not going to cover them and say, you don't have to take care of that responsibility, because it will come back to bite them. So train them to understand that if they make a child, they must be responsible enough to take care of it. Now, so the brother has got to also understand that every woman out there is not available to him. Teach him that he don't become a stud and he's got to have every other girl and he's got four or five girls pregnant at the same time. You explain to him that he's got to also be concerned about his ethical lifestyle just like the woman. And teach him not to be whorish, so that he'll understand that every girl that comes in his presence isn't somebody that wants to go out with him. Now, mothers, you got to teach him about money, too. And I want to tell you that you've got to get those bank books and those custodian accounts, and you got to work with them, and you got to show them how to balance their checkbook, and you got to show them that every time they go and use a check, it must be recorded. Now, if you don't have time for it, send them to Junior Achievement and get the curriculum and start teaching it in your household, mother, and show him how to budget his money. And matter of fact, put him on a budget. Show him how to get coupons and how to make his purchases with coupons. Now, I'm going to be doing this in my household. And I know it's needed. It's very needed that you put your child on a budget, because he's spending your money like there is no tomorrow. Or he's not looking at discount prices, so that when he goes to purchase something, he would have surveilled all of the discounts and sales so that your money can spend less. Now, so you're raising your sons, but you're still loving your daughters. And you're going to still love your sons. Now, those daughters who are out there, they don't feel love, Mom. You got to love them. And fathers, you got to tell those little kittens that they are your best asset, and you love it when they purr. You got to tell them how pretty they are, because you don't want somebody else or a thug in the streets telling them how pretty they are, and the first time somebody smiles at them, they're going to bed with them. You've got to explain to your daughters that there are criteria that a man must meet. That's right. Set up a laundry list and ensure this daughter that she has stocks and bonds, and that her stocks and bonds cannot be reduced. And the way you keep your stocks and bonds high, you don't sell them. Tell her that sex is not an option when you're dating, not until you decide to be married. Let her know that to be celibate is very important, and to remain a virgin, because every man wants a virgin. There's nothing wrong with being a virgin. I know the times have changed, and you're saying that the man wants to sample his goods, but you got to teach your children and your daughters the old-fashioned way. There's nothing wrong with coming up the old-fashioned way. I was a virgin until I went to college. Okay, yes, an old maid, you probably think, but it's important that when a man gets a woman, he wants to know that she has not been tampered with and that her goods and her stocks and bonds are still high. Now, mothers, you've got to explain to your daughters that they've got to think highly of themselves. Don't wait for a man to stroke your ego to tell you how good you are and how good you look. You got to feel good about yourself. So you got to love these daughters, mother, because most of them are saying, well, I went and got a baby because I wanted somebody to love me. Yes, that's what they're saying in these schools. I got my baby, and I know my baby going to always love me. They're looking for love, mother. They want you to say, I love you, and not just by buying them things. Spending time with your daughters and going to functions with your daughter, being a real family. Now, what if they check you out and just say, I got to get me another family over here. I don't want to hang out with my parents because they're too old. Stop them from doing that. You explain to them that there's no such thing as a parent getting to be too old. Things that are done in a family circle are usually strong. But when your child tries to check out on you and they want to develop their own family and they got a new play mother, and then you read about it on the internet and now they got family members that you don't know nothing about, and you're trying to provide a home for them and trying to provide a circle of family, but they're rejecting it. You can stop that thing, mother. You can stop that thing by giving events and family gatherings that your child simply feels he has to be at, because you're going to give the best event there ever was, and you're going to bring family together and show him that family can come together and you don't have to go out and create a superficial family. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Some children are creating a superficial family because they figure mother won't let them go all the way and do everything they want to do. So if they create this superficial parent out there, she don't care whether he do it right or not, or stay out all night or do what he want to do. She has no vested interest in him. I want to tell you young people, stop doing that. Cut it out. Your parents care dearly for you, and they're providing for you. They get a little busy, too. Every now and then, you have to tell them they need to take sabbatical and take leisure and show you how to have a good time with the family. Because if you don't, you're going to go developing other families who are partying and having fun, and you're going to latch on to them. Now, so you're loving your daughters and you're raising your son. Every once in a while, you must let your son take the rein. I didn't say take over the steering wheel. Take the rein and the lead. So many mothers who don't have men at home, they're allowing their boys to come in the house to act like the man of the house, and they're taking over. And they don't know how to do it, mother, because there's been no man there to show them how. Now, I say a half a piece of a man is better than none at all. But at the same time, I know women can raise men. I know this because I've raised a couple of my brothers before and spent time with them helping them to be a man because they told me so. Now, it's very important that young men submit to their mothers and allow their mothers to help them to grow into manhood. Now, I didn't say that the mothers will sharpen their iron, because only iron sharpens iron, but I did say the mother has intuition and wisdom and experiences that she can offer her son. He must be willing to accept it. He must be willing to take the lead and accept it, because it's going to make him a better individual. He can't go becoming off the wall saying, no, I don't want to hear anything. You know, I don't want no woman telling me nothing. A man has got to understand it takes a woman to raise a man because of the sensitivity she's going to show in raising and handling that young man. He's going to learn to be loving and kind, and he will have all the skills that he needs and know exactly what to do for a woman. It's not necessary to only have a man raise a young man. It is important for a man to be in a young man's life, but a woman can assist and aid in developing that young man to be the best man that he could be. Now, mothers, as you are loving your sons, I want you to understand, your son is not your husband. Quit making him think he has to be there to take care of mother, and if he doesn't, you are going to cut him off from the family. You must tell him he is to leave his mother and cleave only unto his wife. You must make him the biggest fan of his family, and you must salute him and get behind him and rally him when he does good things for his family. He'd like to know he's been successful in the area of assisting his family and that you're behind him, mother. Don't go comparing his wife to what he's done for you, and don't make him feel inadequate because you are always making him feel bad because he takes his wife out on trips and he's got to hear from you about how you're never, I'm never taking out on any trips. Why, she got to get that brand new house. Well, I like to go out to the marina, and I like to go fishing, too. Then get you a man, mother. Go find you an elderly man, somebody can take up time with you and do things with you. Quit trying to share your son's spotlight and take that woman's husband, because that's what's happening these days. Some of the mothers have said, oh, kill the fatted cow. My son has come home. And you don't release them to go back to their wives. Now, what is the problem? What is going on? Women who solicit for their sons to come home because they could fix a window or two or a doorknob or mend a broken fence or something, you've got to release them, mother, to go back home to their wives. And you've got to encourage them to stay faithful to their wives. It will go well with you. You can sleep easy once you know he becomes somebody else's responsibility. And you don't have to worry with him anymore. But if you keep letting him come home to sit with you, you're going to be a bundle of nerves, because he's going to be worse off now that he's a grown man, because you're going to be still telling him what to do, and you and him are going to be at odds with each other. And he's going to be terribly confused. Now, if you're allowing him to do things in your house that he can't do at home, and he thinks this is a treat, now I can stay out and I can do this and I don't have to answer to nobody, and boy, I'm grown, I'm having a good time. You are setting up your sons for failure. No woman won't want to put up with him, and he'll never be able to find a decent woman because you've let him set and settle into bad behaviors. Now, if that son is running out, blowing his money on various things, going to the club, going to the boat, mothers, you have to put your foot down. You have to say, no, enough of that. Go on home to your wife. Take that money and put it in your family household. Don't waste it in the street. And, mother, if you're catering to that, you are dead wrong. And you are loving your son and not raising him. This segment has been discussed on mothers raising their daughters and loving their sons, loving them to the point where they figure, mom wants me to come back home because she loves me so much. Now you've made him into a little boy. He don't know what to do. And he's calling his sons, asking them, what do I do? You know, I need your help. He's confused because you're now leading him, so he figured he doesn't have to make any decision. It's desecrating what is happening with women's husbands going back home. And I know what I'm talking about because I had one to go back home. Matter of fact, I sent him back home and gave him an ultimatum. And women, you have to give men an ultimatum when they're wasting money and wasting time and they're not a part of the team and you don't have unification in the family. It will confuse the children. Children need to see unification and they need to see collaboration and working together. If your man doesn't have a job, then his time is well accepted. He can't go feeling inferior because you have the job and he thinks you got the better deal, so now he's hating on you for you going to work. Tell him that the money that comes in is for the family. That doesn't mean that you're going to put his name on a bank account and let him bleed you dry. Now, for you women who are putting up with men that are wasting money, taking money and throwing it to the wind, you don't have to put up with that. You can put your foot down and give them an ultimatum. I don't care how much you love him or how good he is in bed. You'll get over it. But you certainly cannot live in a dysfunctional household where you're the only one pulling the ropes and carrying the weight, women. It will make you old and disenfranchised very early in life. You got to let it go. And if it's real, and if he is truly that man who you marry, he will straighten up and come home. If not, you release him and you start a new life and start over and do something for yourself. Now, I'm telling you what I know. I'm not telling you what I heard or what I saw. I'm telling you what I know. Omi had to eat up this message myself. Now, let me go to the phone lines and ask my host for her opinion on the situation of loving your son and raising your daughters. Let me go ask Mrs. Harvey. Mrs. Harvey, we've got you in the atmosphere now, and we need your input. We want to know, what is all of this nonsense about women raising their daughters and loving their sons and loving them so much that they've gone back home to them?
Well, what I think it is, I think it's a misunderstanding because I think most women, African-American women raising their children without a husband, without a man, and they're teaching that son how to deal with the world. And when he get out there and meet a young woman and he falls in love with her and he brings her home to meet mom and they decide to get married, then he got to develop his own life for his own self. He can't stay with mama all his life. And mama didn't teach him to stay with her all his life. She taught him how to get out there and face the world and how to endure in the world, as well as she taught her daughter how to go out there and meet the world and face the world. Because you can take a young man and tell him how the world is out there for him. For a young black man, it's not easy. And for he has to get his education, and well as he, the young lady have to get her education also. So as far as them getting together and leaving home, going out there, establishing their own home, it's not easy. And mothers have a job trying to teach young men now how to become men. And it's a job, and she has the job on her hands. And that young man has to realize that he got to face it. He got to get out there, and he got to listen to mothers for one thing. Most of the young men nowadays is disobedient. They're hard-headed. They don't want to believe what mothers say. They got to get out there and find out for themselves. And a lot of them get out there and find out the hard way. They end up in jail or end up in the hospital somewhere because they didn't listen. They were hard-headed. So mothers have a double job to try to raise a son and a daughter.
Thank you so much, Mrs. Harvey, for the information. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like for you to continue to listen to us on Always Sisters, Always Friends. We're about to come up on that topic. So we are short of time, but we're going to go right into Always Sisters, always friends, because it's very important that we give you a perspective from a woman as well as a perspective from a man. We know that our young boys are growing up without a father and have been for a long time, but that only tells you that the woman is capable of making men. She has been for centuries, and she continues to do so. So if the young man will be submissive and allow us to guide them, I'm sure that her stern hand will not be too harsh on him, other than the fact that she's going to be loving him, because statistics does show that she will put out the energy to love her son. Sons, you just got to learn to love your mother's back, and you got to be able to be her best friend and best buddy, and look unto her for all your directions. She will not guide you in the wrong way. I like to say a prayer for all the mothers out there who are loving their sons and raising their daughters. I like to say a prayer because we all fall in that category every once in a while, and we need a little help and a little push, and we also need prayer. And we know that the fervent prayer of a righteous man or woman will availeth much. Father God, we come before you, praying every head of household, every single mother who's raising her child alone, and even those mothers who are raising their children with a father who has been absent in his duty. Father God, we pray that every young man will submit themselves unto their mother as you bow your head and put your head between your mother's leg. Know that this is where you came, and because you came from the womb, the final resting place will be in the womb position, knowing that mother scent, her very scent, you will long for, you will desire. When you're in the coldest place of your life, you will cry out for that of your mother. And you won't cry out for that of your father or your girlfriend or your wife, but you'll say, "Mother, why hast thou forsaken me?" But remember, no matter how much of a mess you're in, you could be in a sewer fight with mess up to your neck. If somebody say you're losing and somebody needs to call the law, call the cop, or call the young man's mother to come get him out, the law may not show up. The cop may not show up. The judge may not show up, and the lawyer may not show up, but that mother's going to show up. I don't care how much mess you're in, and I don't care how much funk it is and how stinky it is, she's going to put her head in that mess and pull you out. That's how much she loves you. She is your best friend. She will forevermore be your advocate. Learn to be her best friend. You can separate and go afar and be with your spouse or your girlfriend, but remember, mom and you are friends. You are in it for the long haul. You're in it up to your neck in mess, and mom is the only one that will smell that funk and not quench her nose or turn her nose up. She'll say, "My son, my son, my son has come home." She'll put a ring on your finger, and she'll put a robe around your neck, even though you stink of foul-smellingness. You'll come up out of those prisons, and she'll bring you home into the fold again and make everyone in the household accept you as family. She will look over your faults, and she'll see your needs. You must understand, don't ever turn your back on what mother's saying. If mother has a little time to give you her energy, to give you the subject, don't tell her to shut up. Don't say, "I don't want to talk to you." Don't tell her, "I don't want to hear this." Open up your mind and hear what you're going to hear, have to say, because one day the voice of your mother won't be there, and you'll cry out for that voice, and you'll long for that voice, and you'll repent for the things you said, but it might be too late. Don't let it be too late for you, sons. Don't let it be too late for you, daughters. Always support what your mother is telling you and be in good standing with your mother and follow through on what she's telling you. She can keep you out of a lot of problems, and she can also vindicate you from the world, because the world has no mercy. If she gives you a whipping, know that God has given her the ability to have mercy. She'll whip you and kiss your wounds afterward, but the world will kick you and beat you down. And they don't care if they're girlfriends or boyfriends out there. They will beat you down and tell you, "Go and get a job. You're nothing to me." But mother will take you in when you don't have anything. So, sons, take heed. Cleave unto your mother now while you're yet in her tutelage, and learn from her. And know that she's building you into a strong man so that she won't have to love you so much. She will learn to let you love her back. Now is the time to love your mother back while you yet have her. Now is the time, daughters, that you can grow up and know that your mothers love you. Learn to love your parents, and they will learn to love you back. We say, God be the glory. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as we go into Always Sisters, Always Friends, we're going to let Miss Seeley tell you about her blues. Hello, sisters. How are you doing out there in the atmosphere? We welcome you to another segment of Always Sisters, Always Friends. And my co-host is Mrs. Harvey. She'll be joining me on this journey. And as we bring back to you the concept of sisters and friends, we've been talking about the Caucasian woman not being friends with the African-American woman. We've already said that this war is over with. So now that we've announced that the war is over with, we're looking for solutions. So we're asking for that phone light to light up at 646-478-0270. And the reason we are saying the war is over, we've actually put out the information in the atmosphere, and we've given a bit of information so that the world knows that we've called a truce. Now, once you call a truce, there are things you have to do to make things different and better. So we're going to call a platform for those Caucasian women who would like to even call in to talk with us about solutions that we can adapt on our jobs and in the workforce as to how African-American and Caucasian women can get along better. What are some of the things you think that can be done in the workforce, in the community, and in the diaspora? One of the things I think that could be done better is that the Caucasian woman needs to learn a little bit more about the African-American woman's culture and who she is and what position and role she plays in the family. I don't think she's really been introduced to the African-American woman and her place in society and her place in her home. As number one, her place in her home is completely different from what the Caucasian woman is in her home. The woman that is African-American in her home, she is everything to her family. Even though the father may go out and work for a living and bring home the money, The mother is the center focusing point as to what the aura of the family and the household will be. The African-American woman sets the aura, and whatever temperature it is, that is what it's going to be. However, some homes of Caucasian, it is not that type of atmosphere. It is completely centered around the father's spirit and what it is he wants to accomplish. Now, African-American women all over the diaspora, those phone lines should be lighting up at 646-478-0270. The reason why they should be lighting up is because everybody knows in the black community, if a black woman is not satisfied in the home, there's going to be some hell to pay, and everyone's going to experience that hell. That's because her aura permeates the atmosphere for the home. If she's lovely, kind, happy, and experiencing the pleasurable moment with her moods, then guess what? Her children have to tap into that emotion, and so does her husband. Now, because she's everything to her family, they look to her a lot. They depend on her a lot. And sometimes she's overworked. So do you think for one moment she wants to go to work and put up with nonsense and put up with idiosyncrasies of fighting a needless war? And why do I say that? Because an African-American woman is nothing to play with. She is a grown woman. She's experienced everything from the age of 14 in taking care of a house. So she doesn't want to put up with raising another child at work. And that's what it becomes, fighting and bickering and trying to show the Caucasian girl that she is the bigger person and that she can look over things. It only costs her physical, mental abuse. Because every time she doesn't address the issue and she looks over it, it gets worse. Now, we're looking for solutions. In a family household, some of the things that African-Americans can do is hold more forums and invite more Caucasian women to the church forum to find out what it is they're thinking these days, to put the issues on the table, and to use biblical scriptures to address the problem. Now, we've been able to meet most of our enemies with the good book. Why can't you invite a Caucasian woman to a platform to discuss the impressionable behavior and how they're getting along at work and in the community? Now, most Caucasian women think every black woman's supposed to look up to her because she has the solution. Now, if the Caucasian woman really understood what was going on, she would take heed, and she would observe the African-American woman in action. Most of the Caucasian men do, because they want to invite a black woman not only to their home to care for them and to manage them, but also to their bedroom, because they know they have gotten two for one for their money. They have gotten a full-blown, thoroughbred, hard-working woman, and mentally and aesthetically easy on the eyes and coupled with wisdom. So they don't have to think as much. They don't have to deal with foolishness. Most African-American women are wise old crones, and they've been here before. So in the fact that they are wise, they have wisdom to lend to you, Caucasian women, you're going to have to understand that here's where you could come and get a lesson for free by working in the circle of the African-American woman. There's so much that she could teach you about your way around the kitchen as well as rearing your children. As a matter of fact, she used to take her own pectoral muscles and stand up straight and erect, not bent over, and feed your lineage and your children. That's right, breastfeed your children when you couldn't even breastfeed him because of your pectoral muscles being too weak. So she's strong in stamina and physical stamina and intellect as well. So we ought to find those jewels and gifts that she has and monopolize on it rather than fighting. So what are you saying, Omi? I'm saying we're looking for solutions as to create a platform for the African-American and Caucasian woman to come up with solutions as to how they can work together on the workforce and in the community to make a better workforce and a better world for our children. They're seeing us fighting, and they're observing the discourse between us, Caucasian, so they know that something is wrong. Most children don't look at what color you are when you're playing with someone. They're interested in that person being available to them. But when they are taught racism, they permeate racism, and they're mimicking what they see you do, mothers. They're permeating what they see you do. And if we keep this up, we are going to have a race of people who do not socialize. I'm living in a state right now where most of the Caucasian, they settle on the other side of town and not with the blacks, and neither do they have any engagements together or activities together. Well, I'm not used to it. I'm not used to it because I'm used to a diversified group of people coming together from all walks of life and all races. Why do I say it's better to have diversification? Because there are opinions that you need to know about, and you don't need to be stuck on frozen viewpoint and narrow minds. You need to have access to everyone's disposition on a topic or a subject, which will make you a more broader person and a wholesome person and easy to live with. But if you're narrow-minded and you don't have any thoughts other than your own and you have not been exposed to other diverse philosophies, then you're very, very limited. Now, we don't want to be limited, do we, Caucasian girl? So we're going to invite those Mideasterners around, and we're going to invite those Chinese and those Hmong and Japanese, because we need a plethora of different dispositions on diversity. And diversity is not something that you throw in a few blacks and say, now we've got diversification. You bring all people of color and minorities from different walks of life to converse about how do you get along with someone that is of a different culture and a race than yourself. And talk about what the sensitivity sessions are and what you need to do to be more sensitive and conscious of that other person's color or race. Now, ethnicity is very important. And what we're finding is that people are blending very well these days. But for those people who don't blend very well and they're still dark-skinned people, they need a solution. And that means we need to have discourse and we need to have a conference. And we need to symposium ourselves into a workshop that will help us to be more sensitive to our culture and thoughts and philosophies. Now, ladies and gentlemen, because of the time restraints, I want you to understand that we're looking for solutions. We're no longer going to be fighting on the front line with the cat brawls and the dog fights any longer. We've called the troops. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. If you're still on the front line and still want to wail and fight, we've called a truce. That fight that we've been in for centuries, we've called it off. Now, in looking for solutions, now we know who the mother of the world is. We're acknowledging her. We're paying homage to her. We're learning to pray, and we're learning to ask God to forgive us of our horrible ways, and we're also learning to become diverse and its necessity and understand that diversity is good. You don't have to sleep with the same person of a different race, or you don't have to marry them, but you certainly have to be sensitive to their needs and respect them. So that's all we're asking today, that you respect a diverse person of a different race, and you be humble and learning as much as you can about their culture. And you don't use preconceived philosophies, making yourself to become prejudiced by prejudging someone before the fact. You get as much information on the culture or the race that you can, and you ask questions, and you're sensitive to not to say things that will harm those people of a different race. It's very important that we set solutions so how we can start living together and functioning together on one accord without being racist. Let me go to my phone lines and ask Mrs. Harvey if she can give us some input. Mrs. Harvey, we're talking once again about what we can do for solutions, for creating avenues so we can integrate and become diversified.
Well, my opinion is that the Caucasian woman and the black woman have gotten together better now than they used to, because it used to be a time when the black woman had to go down the hill to take care of the white woman's children and her household, then come back up the hill and take care of her own household and her children. So the black woman took care of two households. But now it's a little different. Now it's different because the white woman and the black woman have a chance to sit down and talk to each other about each other, and they can learn from each other that way. And the interracial marriages is started now. So we can learn about each other, and we can help each other, where my way may not be as good as her way, and her way may not be as mine, but we can come together and talk, and we can come to a conclusion that might make it a little easier for all of us.
Well,
I do feel like that each race can learn something from each other. And one race is no better than the other because God made us all.
Well, thank you on that note, Mrs. Harvey. That was some very vital information, ladies and gentlemen. I do hope you take that information and recommendation to heart, because we can learn something from each race, and there is no one race that is superior over the others. I want you to know that, because Ifa believes that the religion of Ifa can mend our broken hearts. Ifa is a point where all people can learn from the religion, no matter what their race or color. And that is why I practice Yoruba teaching, because Ifa will embrace all denomination and races of people and bring them into a consciousness of having Iwa Pelu, good character and good conduct, no matter what your race is. There are many Caucasian priests as well as African-American priests that work together, and they have a bond. And it is an opportunity for them to work together and doing the work of a priest and functioning out in the community to heal vessels and to redirect lives. So if you can join me in being Yoruba while you're on this airways, then we can come to some commonality of trying to end this war and trying to find solutions for how we can work together under one common cause. And I say, Ifa will mend our broken world. And this is a commonality that we can all meet at and learning more about the tradition of the customs of Africa, which came first. And everyone knows now that the creation of the world came out of Africa. It will give us a starting point to learn more about how we can mend our broken world. And I'd like to thank you so much for being a part of this segment. And Dr. Jamel's not here this evening. However, we're just going to say one thing about, is beauty skin deep? I say beauty is skin deep, because as you begin to think pretty thoughts and beautiful thoughts, your complexion and your disposition will have an aura. A beautiful aura will radiate around you from thinking good thoughts. Whatsoever things are lovely about a person, whatsoever things be of a good report, and whatsoever things are pure, think on those things. Don't always get on the phone and gossip about the negative things that you see on television or that you find out about your friend. Try to find a good in everyone and let your report be a good report. And always concentrate on the fact that your aura is going to permeate what's going on in your mind. And if you're thinking evil thoughts and dirty thoughts, it's going to affect your complete disposition, your morals. It's going to affect your physical body, and it could even derange your face and have you looking ugly and old very fast. So be careful of the thoughts that you're thinking. And there's a little song about Your thoughts are very powerful. Be mindful of what you're thinking, because your thoughts can change the world. So if you're thinking ugly thoughts and mean thoughts, then you have to know that it's going to affect your internal organs first. You could be dying and don't know it, physically distorting your organs because of the way you think. Stinking thinking can destroy you and make you smell ugly, because people can sense when you don't have the general position of thinking good about mankind. Always have hope. The hope that you have, give it to the next man and impede hope upon them and give them encouragement, because we know we are our thoughts. Whatever we think, that is who we are. If so is a man thinking, so is he. If you think bad about others, if you think that you can't succeed, then you won't ever succeed. Your thoughts are you. You must think and understand that you want your beauty to always radiate love. So what must you give out if you want to look the part of love? You must give love out to everyone, and you must be easy to love, and you must also allow someone to love you. Just allow someone to embrace you. Put your arms out. Stretch them out. Now put your arms around yourself and the person next to you. And make believe that you are embracing those who are lonely, who have no one to embrace. Most angry people who say harsh things are not feeling love. I want all of us to feel love, and I want us to give love and know how to receive it, because this is what will make beauty skin deep. For those of you women who are 58 and older and who are gracefully growing in grace, I say to you, keep on loving, and your statures and your countenance will be beautiful, and they will begin to send out a message to those other bitter women that is easier, far easier to love, because it'll make your beauty so gorgeous and make you so warm and charming, and when you're around others, they will see the glow in you. But if you're bitter and angry and you have nothing good to say, you will become putrefied like God found us in our own putrefied way. He could have left us there, but he saw a need to help us and bring us out so that we can share our love with someone else. God does not need you only other than to have experience through. So why can't your experience be a good experience so that God can know good experience through you? Stop thinking ugly thoughts. Stop speaking things against other people. And stop deciding that other people are a failure just because you said so. Start decreeing positive things over your life, and then you will start walking in the light. And start decreeing positive things over those who fall short. Because as they fall short, your words will lift them up where they belong, and you will encourage them, and then God will create a laborer out in the harvest for you. Your time is going to come, and you're going to need someone just like they do. But if you continue to dig holes for everyone else, before you know it, you'll be falling in those holes, and you won't get the enriched life that you deserve. Why not stand strong and give out love and get the enriched life that you deserve? It's available to you today, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to have beautiful skin deep beauty, and I don't mean just on the outside. I want to be able to see that radiant glow all over you, the Shekinah glory, they tell me, the kind that they can see God in you. I can see God in you and you and you and you, but you have to keep letting your light shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Oh, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine, let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine. All of God's children got a house. See, they ought to let it shine. Oh, all of God's children got a house. They ought to let it shine. All of God's children got a house. They ought to let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. on the bucket, no. See, I'm gonna let it shine. Will I hide it on the bucket? No. See, I'm gonna let it shine. No, I won't hide it on the bucket, no. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. You ought to let your light shine today. You can go pick up my CD out on the website. Look for the Jackson Singers. I'm on that CD. And This Little Light of Mine is on that 1979 CD. Go out and pick it up, ladies and gentlemen. Let your light shine today and have beauty beyond skin deep. I'll see you on Wednesday. And we'll be back at you, ladies and gentlemen. I say Odabo and Baba Booey to you, y'all. Let me go and get on this bus because I got to get up out of here. And I know this bus driver wonder where I'm at. All right. I made a mistake. Today is Wednesday. I'll be seeing you on Friday. Let me get BJ. BJ, I got my fam ready to get out of here. Come on now, BJ. All right, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to be seeing you on Friday, all right? Not on Wednesday. Let me say goodbye to my co-host. Goodbye, co-host. We'll see you on Friday.
Goodbye.
Thank you. I'm going to be doing my disappearing act right about now, co-host, okay? Come on in, Cal. I need you to take me out of here.
About to close, so tell me what's gonna happen. Am I going with you? How you coming with me? My girl's not around, and your man just set you free.
Baby, I'm your destination.
You're my destiny.
Yeah.
We both here for a reason.
Say it's meant to be.
Baby, I'm your destination.
You're my destiny.
We both here for a reason.
Say it's meant to be.
Yeah. Girl, let's get up out of here.
to thank you so much for joining us on this journey. I hope those women who have been crossed and fighting have decided to call a truce, because we're no longer fighting in the workforce and we're no longer bringing this fight to our community, but we're collaborating together to make our efforts known out in the public. Yes, I did say that the African American was the woman that ushered in all civilization. That can be documented and substantiated. I said that to get the attention of the Caucasian woman, to let her know there's much that we can teach the community of families and bring them into subjection so we can work on one accord. As I said, Ephah will mend your broken world. Ephah will bring all religions under bear to understand that it's not about religion, but it is a lifestyle. And what we're practicing in Yoruba is a lifestyle that was designed for every household, all races of people. And Ephah, studying Ephah, will help to mend your broken hearts. So there won't be any need for any fighting anymore. So if you understand this, you wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities in high places. Our weapons are no longer carnal. We don't need to embrace with carnal weapons. As we come together under one accord, we can be one nation under God, and we can be fighting and developing process for getting our economic status back on course again as one unit under this race of people with many multiplicities of races, all women coming together for one cause. Now, if that is possible, and if you want to reunite with this effort, then call in on Friday and reunite with us on Friday, because we're going to celebrate and kick it up, because the war is over and we pull down the strongholds, and that stronghold that presented itself against us will no longer be there. Our weaponry will pull down the strongholds. And if your house has been swept and clean, that seven spirit can't come back with the same demon. He will find your house swept and clean. Make sure, women, your houses are swept and clean, so that when the stronghold comes, it will not be able to bring you back, subjecting you to war again against your sisters. Say to yourself, war is now over. I will now start building and developing. I know you can do it. It's in you. It's in you. It's in you. I'll see you on Friday so you can join us. And Mrs. Harvey, I hope you can join us this Friday as we get ready to start the building process of reuniting our communities with black as well as white. And Caucasians, know that the war is over. And if it continues, we already know that the spirits will stop it dead in its track. We are going for a record here, a national record, to bring about communities working together under one accord from different races and walks of life. We say to God be the glory, and we see you on Friday. Oh, God, Baba Booey to you, y'all. I'm out of here.
Peace.
Hello?